Organic Valley has the distinction of being the nation's largest organic farming cooperative, more than 1,600 farmers in 33 states. Before we get into the issue here that I was talking, why don't you tell me a little bit more about Organic Valley, Teresa?
Well, you know, I'm very, very proud to work for Organic Valley. It certainly is some of the most meaningful work I've ever done. Can you imagine in the 1980s, 2,000 farmers were going out of business in Wisconsin, and it was a devastating time. And that's, you might say that...
And why was that?
Oh, wow, that's a very complex question, Mike, and it had a lot to do with biotech even, and you know, the fact that agriculture just kept... It was either get bigger or get out.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you had little farms all over Illinois and Michigan and Wisconsin and all over the Midwest, you know, those farmers, small farmers, just they couldn't keep consolidating and getting bigger. And so just a lot of them dropped out. And so we were, and you know, that's rural America. Each rural town was dependent, the bank, the grocery store, the post office, on farming, the farming community. So we watched a lot of shuttered creameries all across the Midwest, and as we saw the industrialization of agriculture. And we believed that there's room for small farmers. In fact, we should have diversity in farming, just like we should have diversity in everything. And it was, you might say, crop was the little phoenix that kind of got born out of the ashes. And just seven farmers said, wow, we want to try something different. We're going to try and work as a cooperative. We're going to try doing organic dairy. And so we started we were the first national, and you might say there were organic dairies popping up. But we saw that there was a citizen that wanted the kind of product that we wanted to produce. And so we started linking with that consumer and started Crop Co-op with seven farmers 23 years ago. And at the time, everyone said, you can't do that. You will never succeed. I don't even know why you're bothering to try. Just get big or get out. And we said, no, we're going to keep trying to do this. And we don't care what anybody says. We're just going to do what we think we're going to do. And by the way, in those days, it was like, what do we have to lose? Not much. We were going out of business anyway. And so it's been a great success story for Crop. We started out, as I said, at zero, and today we're looking at a $650 million business. We've kept, you know, 1,651 farmers, all family farmers on the ground farming. Some of them only have 20 cows. We have two farmers that have 1,000 cows, but we all consider them family farmers, and we're pretty proud of what we did. And it surely relates to the topic of today, and that is, you know, OMG, the GMOs. They're coming at us.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's saying now, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? You know, it's hopeless. And but this never say die and get out there and keep fighting is in our DNA. And so that's the position we have. We are out there for the long haul. We're going to fight this. And we're going to have our wins, and we're going to have our losses, our losses.
And, well, and we're going to get back to this in a second because, folks, you know, I post these things on my website, and I tweet and I Facebook before the show to let folks know what I'm talking about, and they know that you're going to be on the show today, and some of them are already writing to me to ask me questions about the idea that what you represent is big organic biz versus what might be called small organic biz. And I don't want to get to that just yet. I want to get to the subject at hand, which is the government's decision to allow genetically engineered alfalfa and sugar beets to be planted this year. Let's start with alfalfa, because that happened about a week and a half ago. And it's the fourth largest U.S. field crop. It's roughly worth $8 billion, $8 to $10 billion. And it's grown on about 20 million acres as food for dairy cattle and other livestock. You have Organic Valley and other groups have come out against this decision, and I know that you've been fighting it for years because you took it to the courts
since 2005.
Yeah.
We slowed it down, and we sure annoyed the biotech industry, and they're used to getting their way. So it's been a long fight, and we're still fighting it.
But couldn't you say they got their way anyway? Because this is going to be done. Apparently, the surprising thing that Tom Vilsack decided was that the alfalfa is going to be planted without restriction, and you guys were hoping for at the very least some kind of restriction. Now, explain the difference between it being planted with restrictions and without.
Well, yes, you're correct. But we like to say they biotech railroads things, and that certainly they railroaded this one. Pretty strong, and they did it with the help of Congress, too. Congress had a session before this and really took Vilsack to the woodshed and said, why are you stalling on this? Vilsack was hoping that, by the way, Vilsack is pro-biotech, but he's also pro all kinds of agriculture. So, you know, he was, you know, more or less saying that there's certain, we need to protect our seed. That's the most important part of this. Both for our food security, for future generations, and as the USDA is concerned about, for those very lucrative export markets. You know, 40% of the seed that we have in alfalfa right now is going abroad to Japan, to Australia, to Europe, to Saudi Arabia.
And many of those countries have don't like the GE products here.
Well, actually, many of those countries have laws that forbid them, forbid GMO technology.
And yet I saw an article in a Montreal paper this week that says that the Obama administration is leaning on those governments and working through the World Trade Organization to try to get them to accept these GE products.
Well, you know, Obama is also pro-biotech, so anyone who doesn't think that he is would be wrong. I mean, after all, he came from Illinois. And he also has probably big contributions from the biotech industry. The biotech industry has given a lot of money to different campaigns in Congress and in the government.
So let's get back to that court decision. You know, you filed a lawsuit against the release of the alfalfa seed, and that was in 2005, and there was a stay put on it, and it was, from what I understand, until it could be proven that it was safe. And that, I mean, you know, one of the things that Vilsack is saying is that, oh, no problem, it's not going to cause, you know, it's perfectly safe.
Well, you know, first of all, I'd like to give the Center for Food Safety credit. It was their lawsuit, and we, our counsel worked with them and their lawyers, and also we provided money. In fact, we've actually been suing Monsanto. This is our third lawsuit against them. So all of this fighting requires money and legal and just a tremendous amount of work, hours and hours of work. So I want to give the Center for Food Safety some credit here. The reason why the USDA, and this is where it gets complicated, is that they had what is called the Plant Protection Act of 2000, and it kind of overrode a lot of things that were regulations trying to control the release and certainly give at least the environmental impact study that has to go along with these releases some true teeth, so that you look at everything, not just the protection of plants. But the GMO industry got the Plant Protection Act passed, I think it was in 2000, that said that all that the USDA has to look at is whether it's a threat to plants. Now, there are over 1,000 studies that have shown that that GMOs are not safe, that there's a lot of evidence, peer-reviewed evidence, that say they're not safe. But right now, what we can determine is that the only research and scientific data that the USDA is looking at is this one, quote, does it threaten plants, not whether it threatens humans or the environment or other things. But the second thing, it's the usual reductionistic thinking on the USDA's side, but it's given the biotech industry the fuel that they need to railroad these things through. And we can't see that the USDA is looking at any other scientific evidence than what is industry supported and funded. And what? That is not right. The public should be demanding that the USDA look at other evidence besides biotech-funded research.
Well, you find that in all kinds of products. You know, one of the things when I go out and do garden talks and tell people about products they, for instance, that they put on their lawns, those the analyses of those products come from the companies. Generally, to the EPA, and there's a lot of steps that are skipped, like how they interact with each other. When you have two, you know, you might get a MSDS for one chemical, but not necessarily how it interacts with another chemical.
Exactly, and that truly is a problem to only be looking at one kind of research. And you said something that I want to correct you on, Mike, and I just can't tell you how much I appreciate you and what you're doing with helping people learn about food and gardening and health, but know that the USDA never, in fact, either does the FDA or any government agency exactly say this is safe. What they do say is this poses an acceptable risk.
Well,
it's a small differentiation, but it's a big one.
Well, of course, but what they want you to believe is that it's perfectly safe. And yeah, okay, you're probably right about that. I mean, I can go see the exact words that Tom Vilsack spoke, and it's probably not, it's perfectly safe.
Yeah, they're all about risk assessment rather than the precautionary principle and so on.
Well, yeah, and I've spoken about the precautionary principle on this show, and the idea of that is that the onus should be on the companies to prove their product is safe, not on the public to prove that it's not safe. But that's where we are in this country, where groups like yours and others have to fight the government and have get lawsuits in the courts just to prove that something's not safe because the companies and the government haven't done it themselves.
Right. And one of the you're bringing that back to our original questions. One of the concessions we wanted, besides very, very careful planning so that we don't get our seeds polluted, which is basically, defining isolation distances is what they call that. And of course we've asked for mandatory labeling, and that one, boy, have we lost on that one. We've been asking for that for over a decade. And so we're losing, on that as well. But the other thing we're asking for is, why do we have to pay for the tests if we get contaminated? Shouldn't the biotech industry pay for our testing program? Because we're going to have to start testing whether we're contaminated or not.
Well, that's a really good point. It's like they want their product out there. And one of the things we haven't even touched on is the idea that the product is Roundup ready. And what that means is that the product, this alfalfa, is resistant to Roundup, so you can spray Roundup. That won't die, but the weeds will. But we know what's been happening is that we're creating a whole generation of super weeds, and this has already been shown in various states.
And it's horrible.
And now we've got 20 more million acres and somebody just tweeted here to say, as over 90% of alfalfa is grown without herbicide, why then do we need the GE alfalfa?
Thank you, person out there. That is so true. We don't need GMO alfalfa. That is, unless you want to control all the seeds in the world and control all the markets and make a lot of money. Because we have to be honest about this. Isn't this about money? And about who's making it and who owns the seeds?
Well, yeah, I would think, and it's proof once again that big business calls the shots in this country. And yes, Heather?
Well, I was just going to say, My Skinny Garden just tweeted, nobody has the money that Monsanto does except big companies like Organic Valley or something to do research to prove that this stuff isn't safe. But how do you maintain your healthy product and fight these giant companies?
All right, and let's get to that point.
Good question.
But Teresa, let's get to that point, because I've had a number of tweets because there's been other things, and I've linked all this to my website, mikenovak.net. Go to this week's show. And believe me, I've put all kinds of different articles on there, various links, including a link to the Organic Consumers Association. Ronnie Cummins, who's the head of that, has accused you of selling out to big business, to the biotechs, at you and Whole Foods and Stonyfield Farm. And when I alluded to you being, big organic business earlier, This is one of the things he's saying. And I'll be honest, I'm getting people who are taking that word, taking those phrases and writing to me and saying, ask her about this. How come they sold out to Monsanto?
I think that's funny. After three lawsuits, one of the lawsuits cost us $150,000. I think that's funny. I think that Monsanto would think that hilarious, that we're sellouts. I am completely angry at Ronnie for saying such things, and they're totally unsubstantiated. If he's going to make those kinds of threats or certainly allegations, he ought to substantiate it. Where has he found that we've done that? I just can't see it. The fact that we finally just said, okay, you're going to regulate, and where he's saying it is at a certain point in time, you know, the USDA, it was clear, they told us, we are going to deregulate alfalfa. The question is it with concessions or is it not? And so at that point in time, we said, well, if you're going to do it, well, we need these concessions. And for some reason, we're getting hammered for just talking to the USDA.
Well, but in the final word here, they gave you nothing. Okay.
And we didn't get that. But
you got nothing
from
the USDA.
Don't worry, we haven't given up yet. We're going to get something.
And what is that? What can you expect to get? There are some people talking about some kind of compensation, and I'm using air quotes here around compensation for farmers who have problems, who suffer from the effects of the GE drift or whatever is going to happen.
You know, Mike, the easiest way to think about that and for individuals to think about it is if you drove into your neighbor's car, you would have to pay. When BP spilled oil all over, they're paying. If the GMO biotech community pollutes, they should pay, and they should also pay for the testing for it.
But as we know, Monsanto sues farmers who have suffered from drift into their fields and wins those cases. I mean,
no.
What crazy cockamamie logic is that? What kind of a country do we live in when the victim loses in court?
Mm-hmm. I completely agree with you, but that's why we need to keep getting some restrictions here. We can't give up here. We are not going to roll over and play dead here.
Well, what then? What's your strategy at this point?
I would first, you know, we do have strategies that are coming together right now. I mean, frankly, we should have been working on strategies 15 years ago as an industry. Because, you know, instead of saying stop GMOs, stop GMOs, stop GMOs, we probably should have been a little bit more sophisticated and said, okay, what if we don't stop GMOs? Let's have a contingency and, strategy instead of finally all of a sudden being faced with, oh, we're not stopping GMOs. What's our contingency? So in a way, we're kind of a little bit late here. But all that being said, Mike, you can count on, and also listeners, more lawsuits. And I don't think OCA is going to be funding those lawsuits. I have a feeling it's going to be those of us who have been in there since day one battling for organic that will be fighting and putting up the money for those lawsuits. We definitely have to get some new policy. We need to demand that the USDA revamp their antiquated policies so that we have something that that can protect us. There's also things that we can do on a state-by-state basis. Do you know that atrazine, which is a terrible endocrine disrupting chemical, is banned in Dane County? How about we start with our local counties and find out ways that we can do a citizens' initiative?
Oh yeah, we've talked about atrazine on the show and the dangers of atrazine, and you know, with the danger, there's all kinds of products out there that are causing harm. And again, it's because we don't practice the precautionary principle in this country that it makes it so hard for average citizens to get something done. Now, we've got a couple of phone calls here that I want to bring on, and I want to go to line three and Mark from Lake Zurich. Hi, Mark. You're on the Mike Novak Show, and you're
talking. Hi, Mike. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I've never called in, but I'm involved in a company that sells nutrients to the biotech industry. But prior to that, I actually worked for a company that was involved in genetically engineering. And this relates kind of to corn, but more specifically, I want to explain to you what happened. We were involved in making a genetically engineered chymosin. Chymosin is the enzyme used for making cheese. it's widely used, and they normally sacrifice six-week-old calves and slaughter them for their stomach lining where this enzyme exists in nature. So our thought was, and a couple of other companies thought, where you could genetically engineer it, the same enzyme, and grow it without killing the animals, that would be favorable to society, which it tends to be. Here's the problem. There were three competing companies. Our company was using Brachys, Saccharomyces cerevisiae. Another company, which isn't well-known to the consumer, was using Aspergillus niger, which is a bread mold. Everybody gets it in their home. And the third company was Pfizer, and they were using E. coli as a host. Guess who got the approval?
The E. coli
Pfizer.
People.
The Pfizer people. We eventually all got it. But the bottom line is, the feedback or the throwback when people knew about it and heard about it, and I guess a guy named Rapkin was a real proponent of this, it never took off the way it should have. The bottom line of what I'm telling you is these things are extremely political. And Pfizer got an approval on a pathogen before two safe other hosts, if you're going to argue genetically engineer altogether. Now, 15 years later, I will come to tell you, I think that we need to go back to non-genetically engineered products. And I guess that's my bottom line. I wanted to tell you that little story because I don't think we talk about the politics of that enough.
What do you think the politics of that were in this particular case?
I think that Pfizer had huge connections with the FDA because they're used to getting drug approvals, whereas our company was a biotech company. You've heard of Genentech, I suppose. We were an industrial subsidiary of Genentech, not Genentech proper. And another company was a Dutch biotech company. We were all doing this, and the rules at the time were you could get something, there were no rules because this was like one of the first genetically engineered products allowed in commerce and food. But the rules were, there were no natural mutations that occur in nature. And for every million or whatever, you get a certain number of variations that actually survive. And what you could do with genetically engineered, you could create a million different variants and then do the statistical probability that says, well, this is going to happen two times out of 1,000. This is going to happen 10 times out of 1,000. Well, if I remember correctly, if there's a chance of a normal mutation within 10% for every million mutations, then it would be possibly approved by the FDA. They made a statistical change. I know that's a little technical maybe for some of the people listening, but there is a rationale for letting certain things go. I don't necessarily agree with it anymore after about 15 years in the business. But you have to understand, it's not like they're going to take this real, real wild genetically modified thing and throw it in the environment. The most radical I remember is the built-in pesticide in the corn. What was it called? Starlight or something that Monsanto was doing?
Roundup Ready variety.
I mean, these things are not going to help us because basically humans and animals that rely on these crops will have to mutate to utilize them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, it's mutations that we're worried about. And we talked earlier about the super weeds that come that are developed because of this. And the promise of the biotechs was that we're going to use less and less herbicides because we have engineered these crops. Well, the truth of the matter is we're using more and more pesticides.
I got a dog at home that can't eat standard dog food because he seems to be reacting to wheat and corn products. So I got to buy, really expensive stuff. But what I'm saying is I believe in genetic engineering for life-saving type of things. But for standard things where we have the room to grow, where we have the room to produce milk. We have room to produce. We can produce cheese. Let's go back to the normal stuff. We don't need this other stuff.
Well, we're on a road though. That's going to be difficult, and that's
that sure is. We you know, the thing about GMOs, it's no like going back.
Yeah, and thanks, Mark, for the phone call. I appreciate it. Yeah, you're right. And one of the things that you and I, both the term we used independently, I've discovered, is the floodgates, and it's which I put on my website, and you've written a piece about that, because now we've, okay, so in the past we've had canola, we've had corn, we've had soybeans, now we've got alfalfa. Sugar beets decision just came out on Friday.
Why do we need GMO roses? I'm just, I don't get it.
I don't know. I didn't even realize that was happening as well. So let me take one more phone call. And by the way, we're talking to Teresa Marquez, who's the chief marketing executive from Organic Valley. Let's go to line two and bring in Dan. You're on the Mike Novak Show, Dan.
Yeah, hi. In terms of understanding why the government is doing that, I've worked with them a lot in different issues. And it's King Korn, the movie King Korn, showed why they're doing it. They're very concerned. I mean, it's one reason. There's two reasons. One is they're very concerned about not having enough food to feed the people. And so with the economy and everything the way it is, this is an easy, cheap way to get cheap, empty calories into people, because the formula, as it says in King Korn, is that we're nine meals away from a revolution. And the last thing anybody wants who's in government is a revolution. Now, the second thing is to let them know that there is an alternative. I mean, this goes along with educating people about just how deadly GMO corn is. But products are GE products. But secondly, there are studies that show that if the farms around the cities are used to provide the food, they could provide the food for all the cities. This is a false threat that's held up. We have an alternative in place, which is the usual food that we grow, and the vastly improved ways of growing it organically. So they we have to get it through to the government that they are not facing this stark choice, which all politicians fear.
Well, that, Dan, you're right. That is the meme, Teresa. That is the meme from Big Ag, which is, how can we possibly feed the world unless we have these genetic advances?
Well, you know, we are at peak food right now. There's just a ton of articles on it. I'm not going to be able to cite them right off the top, but anybody who wants to Google peak food will see that peak food has happened over the last couple, 3 years. And I suppose that can be debated, but it's darn close. So we aren't, you know, I was talking to, you know, someone from the UW-Madison.
That's a great addition to the conversation. One of the things you mentioned is that you want to get people to get informed about what the USDA really is doing, right?
Well, yeah, the USDA is a captive, like everything, it's a captive agency. I mean, we have to show that that's a fact. But the thing that allows the government and the people in government to be swayed is that they have this fear of an uprising. And it's not so much that they care about uprisings elsewhere, it's here.
Mm-hmm.
There is no way that the path that they're on is going to save this country, because it's going to increase the health costs it's going to keep going up exponentially, causing diabetes and everything else, and that's going to get up way faster than anything else, plus the effect of the GMO corn. So
yep.
They have to know that the capacity of organic farms is great enough to feed the population right now if we just get off of this.
I think that's true, though. And
thanks a lot, Dan, for your contribution. Go ahead, Teresa.
Sure.
Sorry to interrupt.
I was about to say, when it comes to feeding the world, let's not say genetic engineering can do it. Let's not say organic can do it. All hands on deck, everybody. We all have to do it. Right now, we don't even have a world food plan. 2 billion people in the world are either very, very hungry or starving. And so, you know, this is kind of, I feel like this, that the USDA is not railroading through biotech because we're going to feed the world. I think they're doing it because biotech has billions of dollars invested, and we've stalled them actually getting their return on their investment. They have a huge investment they haven't made any money on, no money on, and don't forget that. And I get kind of upset when I see this, we have to feed the world soundbite, because that's what it feels like. If we were seriously, all of us, every one of us, serious about feeding the world, we all have to work together to do that. And we can't be one agriculture or another. And the one thing that I will say I appreciate about Vilsack, he keeps saying it over and over again, we have to make room for all agriculture right now. We don't have a choice. I don't want to make room for GMOs, and that's getting shoved down my throat. I do at least appreciate the fact that he's saying that when it comes to revitalizing rural America, the small farmer in organic is doing the best job. We are a $26.5 billion business, and we're actually smaller than the traditional agricultural business, especially in alfalfa.
Well, let me ask you a question about that. And we're running out of time here, but the idea being that you're saying you're a $26 billion business, organics, and yet my question is this a threat to organic farming? I mean, is this going to contaminate organics to the extent that the business collapses and that for all intents and purposes it doesn't exist?
I sure don't believe that, and not at all. In fact, I know that this is going to make us stronger than ever, and hopefully it will help us have a wake-up call where we work better together, all of us, even with OCA. We can't afford this infighting, squabbling here, and we can't even afford, I mean, I know people think Organic Valley is this huge company, but we're not the big ones in the industry. I think General Mills is way bigger than we are, and so are some of the other big, big, big ones. Mm-hmm. But that being said, everybody who's concerned about our food now, let's stop the squabbling inside. Let's try and work together now. We have a big, big job.
Why are not people rising up then? Why are not, and I know GMOs have been discussed for a long, long time, but why are people not, putting 10,000 people on LaSalle Avenue and blocking the Board of Trade until we get real answers about the GE products?
Well, I don't know whether I can answer that, Mike. And I'm not exactly sure what the best tactics are. We're using the courts because we have to. I sure wish that we could organize a march on D.C. just to have a wake-up call to other people, the other citizens in the country. But mostly, I think people don't know.
That's my point, is that this largely, it is reported, it's out there, you can find it, but it's not on, it's not at the top of the list by any stretch of the imagination for the mainstream media.
And it's very complicated. Listen to our
yes.
two callers who just called.
Yeah.
It's so complicated. And I have to resist, as a marketer, trying to just put these into simple marketing sound bites.
Mm-hmm.
Very difficult to do.
Let me take one more phone call before I let you go, Teresa. And that is Richard, and you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Yes, thank you for taking my call, and welcome to Organic Valley. I'd like to thank you for all the work that you've done. One of the things when I go shopping at Whole Foods is that the competitive brands out there are Horizon. Most people don't know that that's owned by Dean Foods. And then at other stores, there's an organic brand out there called O. I believe that's at Jewel or Dominick's. I try to buy as much Organic Valley as possible, not just for the anti-GMO support, but because I know I visited farms over the years that it's made up of a whole bunch of small farmers. My suggestion would be to actively involve some of the local coffee shops in Chicagoland. And I don't mean the big chains like Starbucks and all of that, but the small independent coffee shops. When I frequent the coffee shops, I see cases and cases of Dean's milk being brought in and being used for specialty coffees. So here is a coffee house that uses maybe Metropolis, which is a very good locally roasted coffee, or Intelligentsia, and then they douse it with the cheapest junk out there, which is Dean's, simply because of their distribution network.
Richard, I would go further than that. I say, why not pressure the Starbucks of the world? At least it's a company that, to some degree, has a social conscience. So
they have domestic fair trade coffee.
Yeah, why not the same with their dairy products?
I think that's a very good strategy. When they first started out, they were very, I hate to use the word progressive, but now it's tough to get a cup of organic coffee at Starbucks. So the independent coffee shops, the Intelligentsia, that you know, sell the Intelligentsia roasted coffee or the Metropolis, most people don't know, and they walk in there with their little kids and strollers and all of that, and they're consuming Dean's coffee. So why not a little logo right on the door next to the Intelligentsia coffee press logo that says Organic Valley Farmers?
Well, you know,
and more fashionable.
And you're right. It starts with consumer knowledge, and you have to go. There's steps to be taken there, Richard, and you pointed them out. First, you've got to find out which brands are truly organic. And if you go to the Cornucopia Institute, you see that Horizon's basically at the bottom of the list, and Organic Valley is very high on the list. You got to do that, and then you got to go to your coffee shop, and you have to ask, well, what kind of brands do you use? And you have to be savvy enough to know whether they are supporting truly organic businesses and small farmers. And it's legwork that a lot of people don't want to do.
Right.
And I think they should, just as they should ask whether if you go to a place to sell seafood, whether the catch is sustainable. And that's a lot of stuff to keep track of. And I'm not saying that people shouldn't do it. I'm just saying this is very difficult. And as Teresa pointed out earlier, that some of the issues are very complex.
Sure.
But that's a great suggestion, Richard. I really appreciate you calling. All right. Take care.
Thank you.
I think that what Richard is telling us, though, is that this flood of GMO products, it definitely is going to open some new niches for businesses, and there will be a consumer who will be looking for that. And yeah, maybe it's not going to be 80% of the consuming public, maybe it'll just be 5, but you know, you have to start somewhere. And that, I think I hadn't even really thought about it, but yes, we should probably see a bunch of businesses now being much more aggressive about being non-GMO.
That is Teresa Marquez, Chief Marketing Executive, Organic Valley. We have just begun this conversation because I know that as a result of this, I'm going to get emails, I'm going to get phone calls, I'm going to get tweets. I haven't even been looking at my computer here to see what's coming in because I've been so wrapped up in the conversation. And I know that I'm going to take some heat for this, and you're going to continue to take heat for you know, and it's interesting. It's as I said to you before, we're theoretically on the same page here. We want more controls when it comes to GMOs.
You know, I want to say this, though, Mike, about the heat. I don't mind taking the heat because I'm thrilled that we get to watch democracy playing out for a change. We're watching biotech railroad. Well, why don't we, what happened to the democratic thought of dialogue? And I would like to encourage everyone. I'm unhappy when I see dialogue on the on the different Facebooks and blogs that are you know, slinging mud. Let's get back to an honest dialogue. You know, I liked our caller Dan and what he had to say, and he came from the biotech industry. Democracy is about educating through talking with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to encourage everyone, let's get in the dialogue, but let's try and be civil about it, because it doesn't do a lot of good to just keep slinging mud.
Let's have
a dialogue. That's democracy.
And I can guarantee the biotechs are sipping their GE martinis right now and laughing over this. And I'm going to give you, before we go, okay, very quickly, line two. Yes, Kathleen.
My feeling is that we're dealing with the same situation that we have always dealt with in political movements. It is easier to attack each other than it is to attack the really strong bad guys who might hurt us. So we attack each other, and it defeats us. And we can't have this happening in this movement, too.
I think that's an excellent point, Kathleen.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Thank you for saying that. And before I let you go, Teresa, three tweets that came in that I finally got around to that I think are very valuable. One says, your guest has the perfect platform to, quote, inform on their products, and they could organize protests. I'm not, you know, you don't have to respond to this. The second tweet is, it seems like Organic Valley doesn't get the power of the social media and the power of public outcries. And finally, this tweet that came in, I work in a large Chicago hospital. In our informal office poll, over 75% of people had never heard of Monsanto or GMO. There you go.
Wow.
Yeah, that tells you what you're up against.
Mm-hmm.
Teresa, thank you for...
Thank you so much, Mike. I so appreciate you doing this democratic.
Well, I'm just trying to, you know, this is something people should know about. They're allowed to make their decisions on it. I am biased. I'm not a fan of GE products, especially if there's no restrictions. I think that we have put those out without knowing. I mean, like the sugar beets, we didn't even get to that. But apparently, there are going to be some restrictions, but all the studies have not been done on what the effect would be of these products. Well, my feeling is when you're done with the studies, get back to me. And then...
Also remember, there's a lot of studies they're not looking at. And that's what bothers me. There's 1,000 studies out there on the health aspects that they're not even considering.
All right. Well, we got a feeling we'll be talking more about this, Teresa.
Yeah, you sure opened up a big Pandora's box here, but I think it was already open.
I think it was, too. All right. Take care. We'll
Thank
talk to you soon.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Pleasure. Bye-bye.